Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm John Russell. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Ashley Thompson, Steve Ember, and Jill Robbins.
As people stay home to help stop the spread of the new coronavirus, many are using video calling services to stay connected to the outside world. Today, we examine some of the top technology tools designed to help improve communication for learning, work, and social life. One of the most widely used video calling services is Zoom Cloud Meeting, which has many good features for both education and business. Zoom is currently listed as the most popular free app in Apple's App Store by industry data reporting company App Annie. Downloads of the app have risen sharply in recent weeks as shutdowns of businesses, schools, and transportation grew. Zoom can be used on a computer or mobile device to hold high-quality one-on-one video or voice calls or video conferences involving groups. The company offers a basic free service that permits unlimited one-on-one meetings and group meetings of up to 100 people. The basic service limits group meetings to 40 minutes. Zoom also offers private messaging between users and groups, screen sharing, and the ability to record meetings. Zoom provides suggestions on its website for people seeking to use the service to improve work activities at home, as well as educational ideas for teachers, schools, and parents. The app receives high ratings in the Apple and Google Play stores for video quality and technical reliability. Another very similar service is Microsoft-owned Skype, which began in 2003 as an early example of free voice, video, and messaging technology over the Internet. Skype can be used on computers or mobile devices to make high-quality video and voice calls for individuals and groups. It also includes messaging, personal and group chat, and screen sharing. The service is free for Skype-to-Skype calls worldwide, but users have to pay for some services, such as calling a landline or mobile phone, or sending text messages. One of the most popular services for remote workers is Slack, which offers video and voice calls and messaging. The free version permits one-on-one video and voice calls between team members. There is a cost for calls involving additional team members and other services. Slack also offers special programs to support educational organizations and student groups. Other popular video calling services for home-based workers include Microsoft Teams and Google's Hangouts Meet. Both offer a series of powerful tools to link employees to company systems and coworkers. The downside of these services is that they are designed to be used with other Microsoft and Google products. On the personal side, Facebook Messenger has become one of the most popular apps for video calls by users of the social media service. In fact, Facebook data shared with the news website CNET showed a 70% jump last week in people using Messenger to take part in group video calls. In addition, the number of voice and video calls on Facebook's WhatsApp service more than doubled year over year in places most affected by the virus, CNET reported. Groups of up to four people can connect through video on WhatsApp. Apple's FaceTime is another way to easily connect with friends and family, as long as all users have Apple devices. Video calls can be one-on-one or involve groups of up to 32 people. For Android device users, there is Google Duo, which can also be used to hold individual and group video calls. For more of a group video party experience, there is an app called House Party, which is available for both Apple and Android users, as well as on computers. House Party is not new, but downloads of the app recently saw a huge increase to about 210,000 per day, the French press agency AFP reported. House Party has become popular with homebound people who are used to going out with family and friends to restaurants and bars. The app brings people together to socialize as if they were out together, sometimes with alcohol, music, dancing, and games. One user of the app based in the United States, Amaya Howard, told AFP, "The video meetup is one way to relax and take a break from nonstop coronavirus news, at least temporarily. The idea came about of doing a happy hour. We just get on the app and just drink wine and talk," Howard said. "Mostly it's about a lot of randomness. But occasionally someone will say, 'I just can't believe how crazy what's going on is.'" I'm Brian Lynn.
The spread of the new coronavirus has completely changed the daily routines of people around the world. Many are trying their best to find a new normal during a pandemic. Musician Jody Beater's new normal takes her to her home's front porch each afternoon. There, she sets up her music stand, sheet music for everything from Beethoven to the Beatles, and her cello, a large stringed instrument that is held between the player's knees while the player sits. At exactly 4 o'clock each day, Beater begins to play. Neighbors soon surround Beater's home. They stay at least 2 meters from each other, smiling and greeting each other from a safe distance. Beater, who is 69, is a professional cellist. She has played in orchestras, folk groups, and even a rock band. She currently works with a non-profit group that plays music for patients who are nearing death. She lives in Mount Rainier, Maryland, a small city just outside Washington, D.C. The city is home to a large number of musicians and artists. As Americans are urged to stay at home and avoid public gatherings, Beater is hoping to use her musical skills to make this new way of life a little more joyful. Live music shows are not currently possible in the United States and most other countries. Instead, famous musicians are offering live-streamed shows for their fans. John Legend, Pink, Bono, and Yo-Yo Ma have all put on special concerts from their homes in recent days. But Beater hopes her live cello music offers her neighbors and other listeners something that they may be missing in the age of social distancing.
When you play music in a space, whether it's outdoor or indoors, it includes the space and it plays to the space. And so since we're all having to be at a distance from each other, it's almost like you can create a bubble of the music that everybody is joined in that space.
She adds, it bridges the space and it bridges the trauma that we are all experiencing from being cut off from each other. On a recent day, Beater begins her performance with Bach's Suite 1 in G major. The sounds of singing birds and cars going by are part of her space. Neighbors arrive on bicycle or on foot. Some stand across the street. People who live especially close to Beater stand outside their own homes and listen to the music. Even people passing by in cars roll down their windows and slow down for a short time. Lara Payne, a writer and neighbor, came to hear Beater play with her two daughters, ages 6 and 10. Her younger daughter, Delphine, brought her whistle to play along with Beater for one song. Payne said, when we found out she was playing every day at 4, we said, we are going to make time for that. Beater says she chooses a mix of music so that there is something everyone may connect with. On this day, she ends her show with the famous American folk song, This Land Is Your Land. She said, music touches memory a lot. You are playing to things that people know, and they know them from a happier time. They know them deeply, and they usually have communal associations. So, she said, you are helping people connect with things that are from a good place. I'm Ashley Thompson.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
I want to say to you that for the next 4 years, there'll be a Democrat in the White House and you're looking at him.
Presidential elections are exciting events in American politics. Few elections for the White House have been as exciting as the one in 1948. And few have had such surprising results.
This is NBC Television.
We have obtained the results from the state of Ohio, which assures victory for President Truman and Senator Barkley. With Ohio's 25 electoral votes, President Truman and Senator Barkley will have a total of 266 votes in the Electoral College. This is the minimum figure necessary for victory.
Four candidates were nominated for president in the 1948 election. One was the man already in the White House, the candidate of the Democratic Party, President Harry S. Truman. Truman had been the party's vice presidential candidate with Franklin Roosevelt in 1944. When Roosevelt died a year later, Truman became president. He was the one who made the decision to drop atomic bombs on Japan to end World War II. But Truman did not do well during his first few months in office. He made several serious mistakes. He had trouble with the economy and organized labor. His party lost control of the Senate and the House of Representatives in the congressional elections of 1946. Most Americans had little faith in Truman's ability as a leader. They expected that he would lose the presidential election in 1948 if he chose to be a candidate. President Truman did choose to run. He took several strong steps to show his leadership in the months following the Democratic defeat in the congressional elections. Truman called on Congress to pass a number of laws to help black people. He took firm actions in his foreign policy toward the Soviet Union. These included the Marshall Plan and the Berlin Airlift, as we discussed in our last two programs. And he began to speak out with much more strength to the American people. Truman succeeded in winning the presidential nomination of the Democratic Party. He chose Alban Barkley, a senator from Alabama, for vice president. Senator Barkley and I will win this election and make these Republicans like it. Don't you forget that, Truman declared in accepting the nomination. The Republicans nominated New York State Governor Thomas Dewey. Dewey was a wise and courageous man. He was also very serious. Truman campaigned by telling the voters that Dewey did not understand the needs of the average American. He called Dewey a candidate of rich people. One day, Dewey got angry at a railroad engineer because his campaign train was late for a speech. Truman said this proved that Dewey did not understand the problems of railroad engineers and other working Americans. He tried to make the election a choice between hard-working Democrats and rich Republicans. Two other men also were candidates for the presidency. Both were from newly created parties. One was Strom Thurmond from South Carolina. He was a candidate of the States' Rights Democratic Party, also known as the Dixiecrat Party. Most of his supporters were white people from the southeastern part of the country. They opposed giving full rights to black people. The other candidate was Henry Wallace of the Progressive Party. His supporters believed that Truman had turned away from the progressive ideas of Franklin Roosevelt. Both Thurmond and Wallace had broken away from the Democratic Party. Most political experts believed these two candidates would take votes away from President Truman. They believed the Republican Dewey would surely win the election. President Truman did not have strong public support. But Harry Truman was a fighter. He did not believe the election was lost. He took his campaign to the American people.
On election day, the president, the Congress, the governor, the mayor, all cease as the government. You are the government, because then you decide what sort of a government you want. And when you do like you did in 1946, when two-thirds of you stayed home, you get just what you deserve. You got that good-for-nothing 80th Congress.
He said he had always campaigned by going around, meeting, and talking to people. Running for president was no different, he said. He just got on a train and started across the country to tell people what was going on. He wanted to talk to them face to face. When you stand there in front of them and talk to them, he said, the people can tell whether you are telling them the facts or not.
If you give the Republicans complete control of this government,
You might just as well turn it over to the special interests, and we'll start on a boom and bust cycle and try to go through just what we did in the 20s and end up with a crash, which in the long run will do nobody any good but the communists.
Truman campaigned with great energy. He made hundreds of speeches as his train crossed the country. It became known as the Whistle Stop Campaign because it stopped at some of the smallest towns and villages in the country. Truman gave speeches from the back of his campaign train, the Ferdinand Magellan. He spoke to farmers in Iowa. He visited a children's home in Texas. And he discussed issues with small groups of people who came to visit his train when it stopped in rural areas of Montana and Idaho. Dewey and the Republicans laughed at Truman's campaign. They said it showed that Truman needed votes so badly that he had to spend his time looking for them in small villages. Truman said the criticism proved that Republicans did not care for the average American. Dewey also campaigned across the country by train, but he showed little of the fire and emotion in his speeches that made Truman's campaign so exciting. Dewey's speeches were safe. One reporter wrote that Dewey was acting like a man who had already been elected and was only passing time waiting to take office. Dewey had good reasons to feel so sure of being elected. Almost every political expert in the country said Truman had no chance of winning. The Wall Street Journal, for example, printed a story about what Dewey would do in the White House after the election. And the New York Times said that Dewey would win the election by a large majority. Truman refused to accept those views. Instead, he spoke with more and more emotion against Dewey. Most Americans still believe that Truman would lose, but they liked his courage in fighting until the end. One supporter shouted, "Give 'em hell, Harry," them being the Republicans. Soon, supporters across the country were shouting, "Give 'em hell, Harry." Truman made special appeals to working people, Jews, blacks, Catholics, and other traditional supporters of the Democratic Party. In his final radio speech before the election, he promised to work for peace and a government that would help all people. Then he went to his home in the state of Missouri to wait with the rest of the country for the election results. Republicans across the country greeted Election Day happily. They were sure that this was the day that the people would choose to send a Republican back to the White House after 16 years. Some of the early voting results from the northeastern states showed Truman winning. But few Republicans worried. They were sure Dewey would be the winner when all the votes were counted. The Chicago Tribune was also sure who the next president would be, declaring in a huge headline, "Dewey defeats Truman." But the newspaper was wrong. Everyone was wrong. Everyone, that is, except Harry Truman and the Americans who gave him their votes. Truman went to bed on election night before all the votes were counted. He told his assistant that he would win. He awoke early the next morning to learn that he was right. Not only did he defeat Dewey, as he thought he would, but he won by a good number of votes. And he helped many Democratic congressional candidates win as well. The Democrats captured both houses of Congress. After the results were announced, as heard in this old recording, Truman showed his sense of humor by joking about the predictions of his defeat.
I had on the National Broadcasting Company, and Kelton Bourne was saying, "Well, the president is a million votes ahead in the popular vote. We have yet to hear from the..." Very sure that when the country vote comes in, Mr. Truman will be defeated by an overwhelming majority. And I went back to bed and went to sleep.
Harry Truman would make many difficult decisions as America moved into the second half of the 20th century. Truman would send American troops to help the United Nations defend South Korea against aggression from the North. He would join other Western leaders in establishing a new alliance, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. They established NATO to provide for the joint defense of Europe and North America. Truman and later presidents would make decisions to send large amounts of economic and military aid to countries around the world. Many of these decisions were necessary because of America's new responsibilities after World War II as leader of the Western world.
Sienlaha of Belgium has only 20% of lung capacity. She was already careful to avoid viruses, even before the COVID-19 crisis. Laha has depended on caregivers for years. Recently, one of her caregivers told Laha she had paid 10 euros for a mask to protect herself and others from the virus. That gave Laha, who loves to sew, an idea. "I had the idea to make some face masks for my physiotherapist so that she could protect herself and her patients better," Laha said. What started as a one-person operation about a week ago has grown into a small army of at-home Belgian mask makers. Laha opened the effort with a Facebook page called Sewing Mouth Masks. She had 3,000 members within 2 days. Belgian medical officials provided Laha with a design for masks and advised her on what materials she should use. She uses 2 layers of cotton cloth so that the masks can be washed in very hot water and reused. Each person on the team makes about 20 masks per day, and not all the producers are female. The coronavirus spreads mainly through drops of liquid expelled when an infected person coughs or sneezes. Masks that cover the mouth and nose are an important tool in blocking the droplets. However, there is a severe shortage of masks in hospitals around the world, leaving healthcare workers exposed. The World Health Organization is asking manufacturers to increase their mask production by 40%. Volunteer Lise Astro is sewing masks for family and friends. She could not find masks anywhere, so, she said, she made one for herself. "Everyone was laughing at me," she added. "And now all my friends want one," she said. I'm Jill Robbins.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm John Ryan.